Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here, you need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Yes, I know it's been a while. We're going to catch up here in the next couple of weeks, starting today. Jeffrey Wright, you guys remember Jeffrey, 92.9 ESPN Radio in Memphis, has been doing a ton of radio in Memphis, the Jeff Calkins Show, some others, filling in on some other shows, just doing a terrific job up there. I'm like a proud papa about Jeffrey's achievements. We'll get to Jeffrey in just a minute. We'll talk about a number of things. We're going to talk about the NBA Finals, which begin Thursday.
Thursday night.
Cleveland and Golden State. I know that's shocking. Cleveland and Golden State, again, I'm going to ask Jeffrey, is this a good thing? We might talk a little bit about the NHL, might not. I'm going to ask him why his team and mine, the Cardinals, the Cubs, are so slightly below average at this point in the season, and I'm going to ask him if he's worried, and I'll tell him that I'm beginning to get a little concerned about the Cubbies. So we'll talk about the NL Central. We might talk some college football topics. We might even touch on the Ole Miss NCAA thing, which appears to be moving towards some news sometime in the next handful of days. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. Right now at the Oxford Crystal, you can get the mixed five for $5, the country fried steak crystal, the country fried chicken crystals there. Jeffrey always used to tell you about the bigger breakfast combo with the fresh cracked eggs, bacon grits, biscuit, and French toast sticks, a beverage of your choice. And it's getting hot outside. I did the yard today. It's warm. Kool-Aid, slushies, caramel mocha frost, all of that at Crystal. Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next to the Oxford Exxon. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. You call Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes. You can take the quote or shop it around, or just do the smart thing, which is let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for listeners up to our podcast from Missouri to Biloxi, from Texas to Georgia, and that is take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's nice and easy, no haggling, right to the bottom line. And when you get to the bottom line, say, hey, Corey, I heard about the dealership on the Beer Garden, $500 off. The bottom line there, Clark Ford and Amory. Again, the number 662-257-1900. Jeffrey, welcome back into the program. As always, it's great to have you.
It's great to be back. This is always something that I look forward to. We usually do it about once a month or so, and this is something that I always look forward to because I get to be on the other end this time. So this is something that I enjoy, and yeah, it has been quite busy here in Memphis. One of our compatriots, John Martin's getting married this week, so about half the station is down there. So I'm pulling like triple duty right now. So it's nice to do this side of it rather than the prep planning and your side of it.
Yeah, and for your standpoint, though, this is great experience for you because you're getting to do different shows in different times, different time slots, different audiences. It's great experience. You probably don't even realize you're getting the experience you're getting, but subconsciously you're learning, yeah, you know, this works in the morning. This doesn't work in the afternoon, vice versa. This is what works at noontime. I've got to turn it up a little bit this time of day. I've got to turn it down a little bit this time of day. You're in your 20s learning all that stuff at a big market in Memphis. You can't beat that, man.
No, and to your point, it's weird. You mentioned subconsciously, and I've noticed that even when I host like the 9 o'clock show, it's not even like I'm picking different stories or picking different topics, but you just realize how much different 9 to 11 is than 11 to 2 is, than 2 to 4 is, than 4 to 6 is. You just realize like the atmosphere of the show alone is completely different. And so it's certainly been a lot, but I've always been the guy that I would rather be busy. I'd rather be doing stuff than the alternative because my mind is just a really, really special place when I'm bored.
I know the feeling. All right, before we get into any of that, have you started House of Cards or Bloodline or anything yet?
So I started Cards last night, and okay. let's give a shout out to the team that was in charge of writing that, because you know, as we mentioned radio and we mentioned all about the play the hits, play the hits, play the hits. Good God, are they playing the hits right now? I mean, it's just Frank, it's Claire, it's power moves. It's they've really gotten back to the formula that made it the show that we love so much. And, man, it is just a freaking sprint. I'm only two episodes in, but the first two have just been absolutely electric.
Yeah, I'm two in, and I'm with you. They're fantastic, and they are in their lane right now.
Oh, yes.
They are absolutely in the middle of their lane going fast. It's great.
It's a marathon that they're basically running at full speed.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not pacing themselves.
There's no such thing as a pace with House of Cards.
They're the dude when you run the marathon, right? I mean, I've run a couple, and when you do, there's inevitably that cat that breaks out of the starting gate and says, "I'm going to get to the front." And he runs four or five really good miles, and then it's over. House of Cards right now is that guy, but I don't know that they're going to be over at 4 or 5 miles. They might keep this pace up all the way to the end.
No, because they've really gotten back to that. I feel like they spent too much time getting away from what the heart of the show is. Yes, obviously, it's got the political factor. It has the government aspect, and we're interested in that. But the heart of the show was always Frank and Claire and their unique relationship, the way that they operate, their constant desire for power and for not only getting power but for keeping power. And once they got back to last season really focusing on Frank and Claire, it really hit a stride. And then this year has just been just tremendous.
You reading anything?
Wikipedia, a lot of it.
I'm on Greg Isles. I'm on the third book in his trilogy.
I'm at this weird spot where I would like to read, or even better, I'd like to do more like audiobooks, just because I find that's a good activity for like my like well-being. Like just when you sit there and you're listening and you're thinking through things and you're comprehending that way. But man, I'm just at this point where, like last night was the first night I've sat down and just watched something that wasn't sports related. And, you know, thank God I had the Cardinals on TV too. And thank God they really do give up at like the fifth inning. So I was able just to like mentally check out on that. And then I can watch a little wrestling to turn my brain off. But I don't really have those activities or time right now for those activities where, you know, I'd actually like to better myself. I'd like to read a thing or two. I'd like to learn a thing or two. I don't really have those opportunities at the moment. And it was just nice last night just to pour a glass of wine and just sit back and think about absolutely nothing. Like that was just so great for me.
All right, let's start with baseball.
All right.
I was going to start with the NBA Finals, but you mentioned the Cardinals. I watched some of the Cardinals last night too, and then I flipped to the Cubs. And in about the sixth inning, I said, "Oh, the hell with it! I'm not going to be tired all day tomorrow for these guys." The Cubs playing right as we record this. The Cubs just went 1-2-3 in the top of the first at San Diego. The Padres, by the way, 21-33. You'd never know it if they could just keep playing the Cubs. The Cubs, a game and a half out, a game under 500. They are in the exact same spot as their compatriots in St. Louis. The Cardinals, a game under 500, a game and a half out. Cincy is 4 games under 500, 3 games out. Pittsburgh, 5 games under 500, 3.5 out. Pittsburgh, I think, losing right now. I think the Reds are losing as well. The Brewers, 2 over 500, have a 1.5 game lead in the National League Central. They've won 3 of their last 10 games, which has been enough to hang on to the lead. We're too far into the season to say it's early. We're not far enough into the season to go it's over. But what the hell's wrong with the Cubs, the Cardinals, the Pirates, those teams that we thought would contend?
You know, that brings up a fascinating point, because on Sunday I started looking at records again. I was like, holy crap, we are through 50 games. Like I remember thinking, I was like, you know, we have a decent snapshot. As it pertains to the Cubs in general, and I've watched them probably play, I'd say, 15 times this year, so you can tell me if you think that this isn't true. To me, what I see the issue with them is hitters are just always going to go up and down. They do have this weird dynamic, though, where Dexter Fowler really was a big, like, you can tell the impact that he had on their clubhouse, their impact he had on morale, and more importantly, the fact that you know, in center field, you knew who was playing every single day. He's very steady there, and while maybe he's not going to light the world on fire at the plate, he's pretty darn consistent. And so you look that, and now you've replaced it with Hayward, and, you know,
Hayward's having the best year on the Cubs offense.
I know, that's the weird aspect of it. So then I look at what the actual, like, to me, what their actual issue is, it's the bullpen. And they get into these games where, you know, they got to turn to the bullpen in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and they're not solid there. So to me, the Cubs issue is more fixable. You can always go get bullpen help. Like, they have enough to where they can go get bullpen help. So I'm less worried about them. When you turn around and you look at the Cardinals, they have, I think, two of the top 10 starters in ERA and Mike Leake and Lance Lynn. And those are two guys that you can't say for 162 games, these guys are going to be top 10 ERA guys. And so you look at it, I believe they're the only team in baseball right now that's started five guys on the mound all year. And so
yeah, no injuries.
You look at it, you're like, that's not going to hold up. You look at the fact that I made the joke, and Cardinals fans would get mad at me, but it's like, you look at the fact that when your best infielder is probably your second baseman, that's an issue. And so they're not very good defensively on the infield. They're pitching it well, but they're basically pitching it well because their back end guys are holding up their end of the bargain, but they're still not getting great frontline pitching. The bullpen is up and down, and they don't really have guys right now that they trust. And so I thought all along that this was a team that kind of stinks, but they'd figure out a way to win some games. I kind of started seeing like shades of that 2015 team that's actually one of my favorite teams that didn't win a championship, like one of my favorite Cardinals teams, because they weren't ultra talented. They didn't have dominant front end guys, and they were just scrappy as could be. They won a bunch of regular season games. They played hard, and they were a likable bunch. But you knew inevitably when it came playoff time and everyone's rotation shortens, the bullpen shortens, you realize they had massive holes. This team kind of reminds me like that, except they don't have the shutdown back-end guys in the bullpen. They don't have the ability they're striking out way too much. So, like, if you're going to be this scrappy bunch, you got to put it in play. They strike out way too much. And so it just creates a very boring team to watch. They're just not a great team. I mean, they might be able to compete for the wild card because it appears the National League in general is just kind of. Like, when you look at it overall, other than the Nationals, which is unbelievable, that team could win like 105 games and I'm still not going to believe in them, which is insane to think about, especially like when you think about the rest of the NL. But like, you look at the rest of the National League, they're in prime position to get a wild card spot, but to me, the bigger question is, all right, are the Brewers going to make you have to beat them for the rest of the year? If so, the Cardinals have problems because the Brewers, truth be told, their roster is not a whole lot worse than the Cardinals. And then you look at a team like the Pirates that really makes you scratch your head. You got to figure that they're going to be sellers as the summer wears on. And so the Cardinals are going to get some opportunities. If some of those teams fall off, they're going to get some opportunities to win some games. But inevitably, that's kind of why I think when the dust settles, it's still going to be the Cubs, because the Cubs just have the better roster. And over the course of 162 games, usually those teams win. And so to me, like, the Cubs have more fixable issues than the Cardinals do. And I don't actually fault the front office at all for the Cardinals. I mean, they did try to improve every position that they knew was a position of need. It's just there wasn't a whole lot on the market. And so they're left just kind of a similar version to what they were last year, and that's just not a great baseball team.
See, I disagree with you a little bit about Cubs.
All right.
I don't think it's relief pitching that's killing them. I think it's starting pitching that's killing them. They fall behind in game after game. And Arrieta has not been super sharp. Hendricks has been up and down. He's okay. Lester's been really good, except for his last start in Los Angeles. He's been really good. Butler has not been particularly good. Who am I leaving out? Lackey, he's had his moments, but for the most part, he pitches like a 39-year-old pitcher. I think they have, if they're serious about contending in a league where, forget the division for a minute, in a league where the Nationals are very good, where the Dodgers are extremely good, Colorado's solid, Arizona's solid, I think Arizona will fade, but I don't know that the Rockies will, and I don't think the Dodgers will. Their pitching is just fantastic. If they're going to do it, they've got to go get a front-of-the-line starter. So here's my question. If you're the Cubs, if you're Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer and those guys, if to get a Sonny Gray or a Chris Archer, it's going to cost you Javier Baez and prospects, do you do it?
No, because you won a championship by not doing that move. Your better chance is not giving up anything and then signing someone in free agency, because there's going to be more arms available and you have the benefit of having more money than most of your competition. So I personally wouldn't do it. I mean, there is also, on the flip side of it, not to be Debbie Downer about the Cubs, but there is a reason why, when we look at even as great as those Giants teams were, they didn't repeat. I mean, it's really, really tough to do, and especially in baseball when for so long. I mean, I feel like that playoff run last year took so much out of the Cubs, and at the end of the day, you get the satisfaction that, hey, you accomplished it. You won the championship. Imagine being the Indians right now, who are in a very similar situation to the Cardinals and to the Cubs, and yet they're struggling. Fortunately for them, the AL Central is garbage too. And so inevitably you kind of think, well, eventually maybe their roster is just it'll sort itself out and they're going to end up winning. But I mean, could you imagine being on that side of it where you've got the ultimate disappointment thus far and you don't have a championship to show for it?
No, it'd be really tough. It's why I think, and I agree with you about the Cubs. I don't make that move. I don't do the deal where I give up Baez or I give up. I might do it if I have to give up Ian Happ. I'm not convinced that Ian Happ's going to be anything particularly special. He had a great first six games and people have adjusted to him, and now he's got to adjust back. But there's a lot of major leaguers that do that. Remember Junior Lake, the great Junior Lake? Lake had a phenomenal first six games of his career. You know the rest of that story. I don't know. I look at the Cardinals and I see their pitching day in and day out, and I think, man, if they could square it up on the offensive side, I agree with you about their defense. Their defense is not particularly good. That's going to haunt them at certain times. And yet, I'm starting to think maybe the Brewers are a little better than we think they are. Maybe the Brewers actually have a chance in this thing. And so if you're Milwaukee with some of those young kids that you've developed, and I think Milwaukee went into the season thinking, you know, I wonder who we'll get for Braun at the deadline. And now you have to wonder if they're thinking, what do we do? If we're at the deadline and we're where we are today, do we go for it or do we stick to the plan?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's kind of the whole wild card in the Central for me, is it? If Milwaukee really is we make the argument with Alabama football. Just because you don't know the talent's name doesn't mean that they're not talented. And so if they really are just a ragtag young bunch of kids that are super talented, and now we're starting to become aware of that, if they're the group that continues to make the push up top, I think the Cardinals are the team that ends up getting squeezed out, because I think they just have the odds for what has to go right for them to be successful. It's much more difficult to do because they don't give themselves any margin for error. It's a lot like those Pirates teams that we used to talk about from a couple of years ago, where you liked them more than I did because I would just see their extreme deficiency defensively. And anytime you get into tight baseball games and you don't make all the plays defensively, your pitching has to be that much better. You press more at the plate. Like, there's no margin for error. And so I see the same type of theme developing with this Cardinals team, and that they don't have a ton of margin for error. And then on top of that, you have to ask your starters to be great night in, night out, and you've only got five of them. And I get it. Everyone's like, well, everyone's got five. It's like, no. These guys are all on pace to throw well over 200 innings. And you're expecting me to say that that's not going to take its toll as the season goes on?
Completely different note as I'm watching the TV. Have you ever been to Torrey Pines?
I have been to Torrey Pines. I've not played it, but yes, I have been to La Jolla.
If you ever go play it, can I be the driver on your cart?
It does not suck at all. I mean, San Diego is by far my favorite place in California. Like, no questions asked.
It is gorgeous. That is, I mean, they were just showing pictures of Torrey Pines between innings, and wow.
Yes.
All right. What did you think of the Bryce Harper thing?
So I said it this way on our show this week. Could you imagine having to explain to, like, either a foreigner or an alien, Could you imagine trying to explain how the situation developed? Well, you see, this guy hit two home runs off of this pitcher two and a half years ago,
yeah.
And he kind of admired his work, if you will, and so that really rubbed this pitcher the wrong way. Now he had the chance to get even 3 years later, and he hits the guy in the middle of a 3-0 game, and it sets him off. When people go, why does baseball get the reputation of being stuck in the past? Like, that stuff right there is pretty much it right there, like in a nutshell. And then you take it a step further. Like, the ironic part is the one thing that seems to be completely lost in this conversation. Can we go back for a moment and talk about how Bryce Harper's helmet throw might have been the most pathetic helmet throw in the history of Major League Baseball? Because his post-game comments were basically like, I was trying to throw my helmet at him, and he threw it just completely slips out of his hand. Like, his whole body somehow leaning to the left, the thing goes to the right, and it's just like a flutter ball. Like, it was a terrible, terrible helmet throw. And then on top of that, you've got Buster Posey, a man after my own heart.
Dylan
screenshotted the picture of Posey just sitting there while everyone else clears the benches, and he's like, nope. Not going to do it. He's like, that's
not dying on that wall.
No.
No, sir.
Like, you're an idiot. You got yourself into this position. It's not my responsibility to make up for your idiocracy. And actually, I think it's a pretty good point. I think if...
Well, I agree with Posey completely.
Well, think about this, though. If you're Strickland and you know, realistically, most of your team is going to come to your defense... It's a lot easier to throw at a Bryce Harper when you know you've got 25 guys that are going to have your back. I wish they'd do it like hockey does. If I throw at you, it's just me and you mano a mano. And I'm very curious, if he knew that he didn't have backup, does he throw at Bryce Harper? Because I think Bryce Harper has the advantage in that situation.
I'm with you about Harper, and I give credit to Harper in admitting that he was trying to hit him with the helmet.
Sure.
Because if he said, yeah, I meant to throw it away, I'd be like, come on, Bryce, really?
Yeah, no.
I mean, you can see that it slips. I'm sure he was pissed that it slipped because he wanted to nail it with the helmet.
Oh, for sure.
And then he got a shot in. I don't blame Harper a bit. Personally, I wish Strickland would have been suspended more and Harper may have just gotten like one game. Like, the league said, hey, you can't do that. But we understand, so sit a game. Take a day off. I didn't like the 4 games.
To me, the bigger ironic part, and this is another issue with baseball, if Bryce Harper just kind of, you know, rubs it off and then walks to first, phrasing I know, walks to first and no melee ensues, Strickland doesn't get suspended.
Yeah, even though he's clearly trying to instigate a brawl.
Right. And so, to me, it's like, we have to figure out something about this. And to me, it's like, I really do wish that they would just adopt the hockey rules, like, if we fight, it's mano a mano. And because I think that would get a lot of this crap out of there.
I agree. Okay, we're going to get to NBA in just a second. First, let me tell you, the podcast brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis. So you are getting local underwriting that understands your market. It is the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about the Community Mortgage float down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. Get in touch with Jason at 662-234-2704 or email him jlowe, that's L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. All right, NBA Finals tomorrow night, Warriors and Cavaliers. We'll get picks and stuff in a minute from you. Is this good for the NBA? I'll tell you this, Jeffrey. You know me. I watch a lot of
yep.
NBA. I watch more NBA than I want to watch. One of my goals is going to be to start curtailing some of the amount of NBA that I watch. I've not watched much of the playoffs. They've bored me. They've not been competitive. In fact, when the Kawhi Leonard injury happened and nothing happened to Pachulia, I said, screw it. I hadn't watched again. Now, I will watch Cleveland and the Warriors because I'm cheering for Cleveland. I'm hopping on the Cavalier bandwagon. I'll hop right off when the thing's over. But I don't know, maybe this is, I'll admit that it's possible that this is me being bitter, but I don't think it's good for the game. I missed the competitive, you know, a year ago, whether you were for the Thunder or you were for the Warriors, you got a classic series. There was drama. The games were fun. They were intense. We didn't get that this year. I kind of felt cheated.
And even before that, we got a classic series between the Spurs and the Thunder. Like,
yeah,
hang with me here. I think that this was somewhat of an anomaly, because you had this storm of variables that I don't think are norm, and I don't think they're going to become the norm. You have the new CBA, which says that teams have to spend this amount of money. You had the new TV contract kick in. There was more revenue than ever. And you also had one of the top five best players in the game, if not the second best player in the game, available in free agency. And so you have this weird situation where, and then on top of that, with the Warriors, you have a team that, though they're a quote-unquote super team, they're not having to pay all of their guys as if they are superstars. I mean, Curry's on the back end of, what, a four-year, $44 million deal? Like, you have all of these set of circumstances that I don't think can be repeated. And so when you look at it from that perspective, like, I just think that this is an anomaly. However, what I do find to be more interesting is that I think that the only way, like when people talk about super teams and how they're bad for the game, okay, I theoretically agree with you. The difference is we're in the day and age of free agency. Like, it's just the way that it is. There's a reason why David Stern all those years ago decided to market stars rather than market star franchises. Like, that's the way that the league works. What I think, though, is the best way to start combating the Warriors and start combating the Cavs, you now got to have more super teams. Like, I think you need the Chris Pauls of the world to go to San Antonio. You need the Paul Georges of the world to go to Boston. You essentially need these maybe not number one type guys, but these 1B type guys, 1A type guys to start going to these other franchises that are close, but they're not there. Because if the overall idea is to make the playoffs more competitive, you have to have teams that are capable of stretching these series. So to me, it's almost like it's a weird backwards thinking, but it's almost like the way to combat super teams is just to build more super teams. And so,
oh, I'm with you. Like, I want Chris Paul to go to San Antonio. I don't think it's enough necessarily, but it makes it interesting. I want someone. I either want Russell Westbrook to have someone join him, or I want him to go someplace and join somebody.
Yeah, to me, like, when I look at the Thunder, like, to me, San Antonio is closer to being competitive than the Thunder are.
Absolutely.
And it's why I've always said Russell Westbrook was the MVP to me. Like, I just look at that team, and without Westbrook, that team is a borderline, like, 20-win type team. Like, they're for sure a lottery team. They're a borderline, possibly having the most ping pong balls at the lottery. So, like,
Not have won the 15 games.
Right. So I look at that, and it's like, that team's way farther off for me than a Spurs or a, the truth is, like, I feel like they're farther off than the Raptors, but then the Raptors have a weird decision to make because they clearly aren't a championship contender, and they're probably more than a player away. But, you know, you start looking at all these teams that could maybe use a piece or two to make this competitive, and it's like, realistically, how many teams are there that are that close?
If you're Boston, what do? You have the first pick. Fultz is out there. He's probably the safest pick at the top of the draft. You already have a point guard. I know people say, well, you know, look at the last couple of games of the Eastern Conference Finals. That is a mistake when you do that. If you evaluate a player based off a series and not off of a season and what he's done for your team, that is a surefire way to make an error in your evaluations. So if you're Boston, what do? Do you trade the pick? Do you trade Thomas in some blockbuster? What do you do?
While I agree with you, like, don't make the knee-jerk reaction of saying Thomas goes out and then we started getting more competitive. Like, I do agree with that. Like, Thomas, even when Thomas started the series, he wasn't healthy. So I do agree with you on that. However, I do think one aspect about the rest of the Eastern Conference Finals that it showed is that when Isaiah Thomas is on the floor, for him to justify his being on the floor as much as he is, he has to go get like damn near 40 points. And so realistically, I don't think you can expect that night in, night out. And then you just saw, man, if he's not scoring, the other end is just such a liability. And it's the same argument that we always make when anytime anyone asks us about a great college scorer, like, what do you think about him in the NBA? It's like, who's he going to guard? Who's he going to defend? Because people can make all the jokes they want about defense in the NBA, but if you can't defend, you're too much of a liability to put on the floor. To me, it's a matter of what do you think about Fultz? I mean, I personally think the guy's ceiling is Dwayne Wade. However, you know,
hell of a ceiling.
I mean, we look at like the Oladipo draft. Other than Giannis, I don't think there was an all-star in that draft, and Giannis was taken at like 16. So like the entire top half of the draft was not good. And not to say that I think that this draft could wind up being like that. I think the lottery's pretty darn good this year. But it's not like every lottery pick is destined for greatness. I mean, look at the Conley, Durant, Oden draft. The Grizzlies at 4 probably got the second best player in Conley, and that was a pick that everyone was scratching their head about when they decided to go that route. And so it's such a crapshoot that if his ceiling is Dwayne Wade, then you have to start realistically asking, okay, what's his floor? And so if you determine organizationally that his floor is, you know, a guy that's going to play point guard in the league for 10 years, maybe he'll spot start here and there, but, you know, it's a 10-year guy, then you can't give up Isaiah Thomas because you have to weigh the ceiling with the floor. But if your idea is that, man, the guy's 6'5", he's an electric – he's electric guy in the rim. He's, you know, he's the type of guy that can really lift us. Then, yeah, I do think you have to think about Isaiah Thomas being the trade piece that maybe takes you when you consider, okay, we add Fultz. Even though rookie point guards are usually not the best recipe to compete for championships, that gives us the best chance for the next, you know, 7-8 years.
All right, we're going to talk about the finals themselves in just a minute. Let me first tell you about LB's Meat Market. Jeffrey, you're well familiar. LB's, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. Call Greg Jones, tell him what you want. He'll have it ready for you. Or you can do what I love to do, which is go in and browse. You know how like a lot of people love to like go up and down Michigan Avenue or through a mall or whatever and browse? I like to go into LB's and browse.
Yes.
I end up spending more than I meant to spend. I probably end up eating more than I needed to eat. But it's so much fun to browse. They've got all the fresh cuts, the bone-in ribeye. I can't recommend it enough. They can briskets. They can season stuff for you. The chicken from Como Farms. They can do whatever you want. They can set you up. And you got to check out their sausages. They have some new ones out. The Swayze sausage. It's beer, bacon, cheese, and jalapenos in a sausage. Let's stop for a moment. Just kind of think about that. Just a moment of silence.
Just letting you know, I haven't eaten all day, and it's now approaching 3:30, so I do not appreciate
beer,
this.
Beer, I'm in favor. Bacon, I'm a big proponent of bacon. Bacon should run for president. It would win. Cheese, generally a fan. And I love jalapenos in a sausage. Life is good. Cubs get a run, then give it right back up in the bottom of the second.
That's that shutdown inning you're looking for. Mm-hmm.
They have all sorts of summer sausages as well. It's hot outside. Sometimes you don't even want to. You don't even want to put hot food on a grill. You just want to eat something. You're hungry, but you don't want it to be hot. It's too hot. All right. Well, they can help you. They got the Italian summer sausage, the smoky bacon summer sausage, and the smoked black and blue summer sausage. You got to try those at LB's. And when you go in, the beer fridge is right there on your left. Tell Greg that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden podcast. You get a six-pack of your choosing for $6 at LB's Meat Market. Podcast also brought to you by John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore expeditions. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. Tuna Chaser Charters, located at 200 East 8th Slip C2 in Biloxi. Check out the Facebook page. Give them a call, 228-348-7817. Whether you're looking for a quick fishing trip inshore, a serious deep sea fishing excursion, or anything in between, let John and the folks at Tuna Chaser Charters take care of you. Snapper season's been extended another 70 days for any in-state waters. So if you're heading down to the Gulf, keep them in mind. Might make a really fun afternoon or morning outing to go fish for some from Snapper there from Tuna Chaser in Biloxi. All right, so the finals get started. In your mind, does Cleveland have a chance?
So we had – I got this Twitter question when I was hosting a show last week, and oftentimes, you know, when you have to wade through the crap of you suck and whatnot, we have to wade through on Twitter, occasionally you get a really good question. And it was a listener asking, if you had to rank the top 14 players in the series, which side has more of the top 14?
Ooh.
And I thought that was a terrific question because when you really start looking at it, okay, we obviously know who the top seven players are.
LeBron is one.
Yep.
Durant's two.
That's what I went with as well.
For me, I'd say Klay Thompson's three, but whatever.
We were accounting for the current play.
Okay, Steph is four. Kyrie is five. Draymond Green is six. Tristan Thompson seven.
So you got Thompson.
Kevin Love is eight.
Okay.
If Iguodala is healthy, he's nine. I like Kyle Korver.
That's who. Yep.
Who am I forgetting?
So we had J.R. Smith.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I mean,
you have J.R. at 11, so my top 10 is basically the same as yours.
Yeah, we had some different order. I'm in this weird spot where I think Kevin Love, like if you break it down, like both ends of the floor, he's been really good on both sides. Like offensively, he's in like the 80th percentile for points per possession this entire, not only throughout the playoffs, but throughout if you include the regular season and the playoffs. And defensively, he has been fantastic. Like I think he's around like 75, 76%. So I actually had
this. Who's the guard in this series?
I mean, I guess Draymond, and I know Draymond eats his lunch, but to me, that's what's so fascinating. Who guards who in every possession? Are they going to put?
Who does LeBron guard?
That's my deal. Does LeBron take on Durant and try to take him out? Like, is that what?
Because he kicks his ass, man. He's always kicked his ass. He always eats Durant up.
Okay, but then you have to start considering
there is foul trouble.
Foul trouble, and then you also consider on the offensive end. The one aspect that I do think gets left out is that we all make the Kyrie defense jokes. There is one dude on the planet that Kyrie really plays defense against, and you can tell it is 100% pettiness, which always makes me happy to see when a guy plays purely out of pettiness and spite. But, man, when he goes up against Steph, he hits another level. And so,
well, Steph can't defend. I mean, that's he's a bad defensive player.
Sure. And to me, so what it really comes down to is I get it. The four best of the Warriors are better than the four best, whoever in some variation of the Cavs. But, dude, the best bench players, general manager LeBron does not get enough credit for surrounding himself with role players that make sense. Everybody has a defined role. Like you look at, I think Zach Lowe wrote it to either today or yesterday. He wrote about how Tristan Thompson is essentially the most elite role player in the league. And while some people may roll their eyes at it, no, what he means is
not me.
Tristan Thompson has a clearly defined role, and Tristan Thompson's really freaking good at what he's asked to do. And
totally embraces that role.
Kyle Korver has completely embraced his role. J.R. Smith, like LeBron has, Coach LeBron has also really gotten J.R. Smith to drop the ass hattiness, and he's gotten him to really embrace what they need him to do.
And then he takes his lunch pail to work. He really does. And that's a cliche, but he does. He does all the dirty things for them.
And he's gotten Iman Shumpert to buy into his role. And then, for God's sakes, Neil, Darren Williams has been awesome this playoff series. He's getting him 18 minutes. He's good on both ends. His net rating on both offense and defense is like plus 17. And like, he's gotten them all to buy in. And then when you start talking about the Warriors bench, like, Zaza Pachulia, take the dirtiness out. Like, he has not been good. Iggy has clearly been hampered. He has not been good. Defensively, Iggy's been really bad. Like, bad. Which tells you how hurt he is, because he's not a bad defender. And then you start looking at the fact that Klay Thompson is not exactly lighting the world on fire. Now, granted, I understand he's still shooting from three. He's still pretty much shooting what he does. But, you know, he gets a lot of points in the paint from finishing, and that's not what he's doing. And so I look back to, like, last series, like when I think about last year. Essentially what they did was they said, okay, we're going to close out on Klay, we're going to close out on Steph, and we're going to make Harrison Barnes beat us. Harrison Barnes, the stage, whatever, however you want to say it, he wasn't good enough. The stage was too big. He was unable to do so. All right, so now if we look at this matchup, can you take away Klay, Steph, and Durant? And if you can, how do you do it?
You can't take them all away. You have to decide. I think you have to make up your mind that you're going to let one of them go off. And no matter how much he goes off, you're going to stop the other two.
Don't you have to say that guy's Klay?
And if or Steph.
Well, to me, like, if I look at who you'd be able to completely take out of the game based on matchups, all right?
You can take away KD and Steph. You can't. There's no one really.
Exactly.
Unless you put LeBron on him.
Right. And
there's
then,
no one really. J.R. Smith maybe a little, because he's. Yeah. I mean, they just don't have a matchup for Klay. So you let Klay have his.
Sure.
But then you really, the series becomes contingent on, okay, well then in that scenario, maybe you put Tristan Thompson on Draymond. Maybe you bury Kevin Love on Zaza Pachulia. Maybe you force the Warriors to go small. Maybe you put Love on Iguodala when he's out there and say, hey, he's not healthy, we can handle him.
I mean, to me, that's what it comes down to.
But you can't let Klay and Draymond go off. You can let one of the other go off. Here's the thing with the Warriors, and that's right, I'm conflicting in my message. I go back and watch Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if Durant and Westbrook have average fourth quarters,
yep,
the Thunder win the series.
I know.
And we're not talking about this dynasty that people are talking about. And it's funny, we all spend a lot of time on what will it mean if LeBron wins? What does it mean for LeBron's legacy if he wins? What does it mean in his comparison to Michael Jordan if he wins? What does it say about the Warriors if they don't win?
Well,
can they keep these guys together another year if they don't win?
Not to crap on your point, but okay, let's also throw out another what if. If Draymond doesn't get suspended, and even though I think it was rightfully so, let's say he doesn't get suspended, and let's say
they win the series in five games.
They win the series, and you know, I think we put so much like, and I do think LeBron, like I'm in this weird spot where I still do believe Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time because of his resume. I think his resume is deeper. But I do also recognize that if you're playing one-on-one, I want LeBron first. I want to bet on LeBron. I don't want to bet on Jordan. And I recognize all of that. But if Draymond doesn't get suspended and LeBron doesn't come back from the 3-1, if they don't come back from that 3-1 deficit, are we even considering whether or not? Like, it feels like we're having to talk ourselves into the Cavs. And that's the one thing. It's like, I don't want to think that I'm talking myself into this. But at the same time, it's like, I also don't want to doubt LeBron. Like, it's just, it's such a weird series because we can mention all these shoulda, coulda, wouldas, what ifs. Does that change anything? It's like, I really don't know, because, like, you look at LeBron, he's in his eighth finals, seventh consecutive. Of the eight finals, he's been an underdog in six of them. Well, he's three and three as an underdog. And now he's a bigger underdog this year than he was last year. And the weird thing to me that I'm scratching my head is we haven't seen a playoff where the big three of them for Love, Kyrie, and LeBron, we've never seen all three of them play this well at the same time, and yet now they're a bigger underdog than ever.
Short series or long?
My gut says Warriors in six. And honestly, truth be told, my gut says Warriors in five, but I watched LeBron more shorthanded than ever stretch the thing to six. If Kyrie doesn't get hurt in the last minute, he probably stretches this darn thing to seven back in 2015. So it's like I can see LeBron winning two games.
Yeah, I have promised that if the Cavs win, I will buy a LeBron jersey, the one with the sleeves, because otherwise you look like a douche. And I'll wear it every day for a week.
Well, I mean, let's get real here.
But I don't think I'm buying a jersey.
Let's get real. We're all Cavs fans, right?
Oh, dude. I am so Cavs for the next week and a half, like, whatever.
If you have a shred of moral integrity, you're rooting for the Cavs, right?
I mean, I am bleeding maroon and gold.
Like, I think we can all agree that if there is such thing as good and evil and good should prevail over evil, we need God to step up and do his job here.
Yeah, I mean, look, if God cares about basketball,
right,
we're going to find it. If what mm-hmm. you want to know in yes. life is, does God care
yes.
about the NBA?
Uh-huh.
Does God care about sports?
Yes.
We're going to get our answer in the next 2 weeks.
I mean, we can
throw. We are getting that answer.
We can throw.
If the Warriors win, it is God sending a message. Hey, I have got bigger fish to fry.
Speaking of things that definitely matter and definitely contribute to this series, so we've got an intern with us for the summer. And he started, I don't know how he stumbled upon this. I don't know if it was on Twitter. I don't know if he started just kind of thinking. So every year that Alabama has won the national title and LeBron's gotten to the finals, LeBron wins. But when Alabama gets knocked out before LeBron loses. Is this the trade-off? Like, God gave us Deshaun Watson. He gave us that amazing moment. Like, we got to lick those Alabama tears. Is that God saying that was, you can't get both, but you can yeah. have one?
Yeah. God says you've had enough.
I mean, these are the questions that I wish the church today would address.
That's along the lines of, it's not a sin to drink, but yes. it's a sin to drink too much.
Yes, 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 of course. Like, I need, yeah. yes. Like, if drinking's so bad, then why was literally Jesus' walkout song, his walkout song was turning water into wine, like water into wine. So, like, if that is the case, like, you're really sending mixed messages here, people.
You really are. And if he lets the Warriors win, it's the tired question. Warriors win and KD's not the MVP. Is it a cheap championship for Durant?
100%. 100%.
For it to not be a cheap championship, doesn't he have to dominate LeBron?
Yes, I think so. And that's the other aspect of it. You and I have talked about this, and now I think you're a little more open to the argument than ever before. Like, I feel like on the court, no one gets more free passes continuously than Kevin Durant. Like, offensively, that guy should be unstoppable.
Yeah.
And yet he has moments where he just disappears. This is, without a doubt, he is the only guy, in my opinion, in this series. I guess maybe Draymond, because Draymond runs his mouth and Draymond knows inevitably, like, if he doesn't get kicked out of that game, that they probably win another championship. Like, I guess he has some pressure on himself. But to me, the guy with the most pressure on him is Durant. Durant's not exactly like what I would consider, like, I love how we always make fun of LeBron for not being clutch. It's like, dude, Durant is way less clutch.
Durant gets such a free pass. When I hear from people who know what they're talking about in the Western Conference Finals last year, before Game 5, before Game 6, Kevin Durant eating dinner with Draymond Green and other members of the Warriors. I know people go, oh, you're a Thunder fan, you're letting this get to you. Can you imagine if LeBron James before the finals against the Spurs.
Sure.
Was out having dinner with Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili.
Oh, he'd been crucified. It up. He would have been crucified.
They'd have killed him, Jeffrey.
There's no one I can remember ever that we changed the argument for like we do LeBron. And it's just driven me insane. And then it's also just continuously, like, I don't feel like anyone gets a free pass quite like Durant.
Can you imagine? Is there another player in if we found out that the night before the Super Bowl, Matt Ryan went and had dinner with a couple of the Patriots defensive players? Can you imagine?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I guess the closest thing is maybe didn't MJ, it was mind games, but like, didn't MJ used to take out, like, wouldn't he take out, like, Barkley during that final so that, like, Barkley would think, like, that they're buddies when in reality all he was trying to do was just make him fat and drunk and hungover?
I mean, that's certainly possible, but it's amazing. What's amazing is it never really got reported.
Yeah.
People protected him. The Oklahoma City media protected him. The national media protected him. It's unreal. You look back and because you can't look, and I'm not going to say Durant threw a game because that's silly.
No, I don't think that either.
But you go back and watch game six, and it's weird. In light of, hey, he's hanging out with that guy the night before. That's the same guy that had kicked his starting center in the,
yeah,
you know.
I mean,
the place that we know that none of us want to get kicked.
I guess the other flip side of the argument is, do you really trust Draymond Green? Like, if he really does have to play with his chip on his shoulder like he believes that he does to be successful, and I'm not judging whether or not that's true, like, but if that is the case, like, I don't understand how he's not a liability, because that's just the way he is. And with this kind of scope, you know, LeBron's going to make over-traumatize everything because that's what LeBron does. It's this weird thing. It's like expecting Draymond to just still play at an elite level while also keeping his wits about him. Like, to me, that almost seems unlikely.
And Draymond's the guy that probably has to guard LeBron.
That's my point. Like,
yeah, exactly. No, you're right. It's a weird series. If Cleveland gets one of the first two, got a chance to go seven. And if it goes seven, this is where it's crazy. See, if you tell me that it's a short series, and obviously the Warriors win. If you tell me it's a seven-game series, my money's on Cleveland in a seventh game.
Yeah, I mean,
because they have LeBron.
I agree. It's kind of what we saw last year.
My money's on LeBron in the big game.
Yes. I mean, and the other thing is, it's like, it feels like if it gets to that point, the Warriors are going to be tighter than the Cavs will be.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Because if the Warriors don't win, it's 2 years in a row they don't win. You go out and you get the super team and you don't win. You win 73 games and you don't win.
Oh, I'm with you.
And then Cleveland now. It's where the talking heads that do the LeBron game. If Cleveland wins the series, This LeBron argument about, is he better than MJ? I don't know if he's better, but he's right there on the same level on the basketball Mount Rushmore as Jordan.
Well, it's almost,
and I love Jordan. I watch Jordan a lot, but I'm going to tell you, they're different players, and it's not fair to compare different positions from different eras, and those are different eras. But you're telling me LeBron James wouldn't have thrived in the old physical NBA? Give me a break.
I mean, like, the other aspect of it is, it's, you know, I always laugh at this when we talk about Jordan had more competition. Okay, I get it. Those Patrick Ewing Knicks teams were pretty good. But they had, what, three opportunities without MJ to get there? I guess they realistically had two. Still didn't win a championship. All right, well, then the East was always more competitive. It's like literally the day that Jordan retired,
who was the good team in the East? The Knicks, the Pacers with Reggie Miller,
and the Magic, and the Magic,
Mark Jackson and Rick Smits. And come on, give me a break. There was a nice team, and Reggie Miller could shoot the hell out of it, and was one of those guys that could score, be a volume scorer, and win games, and they were fun. And the Knicks were fun with Starks and Ewing and Oakley and all of those dudes. But there wasn't an elite guy in that backcourt.
No, and then on top of that, the day that MJ retired after the sixth championship, we started calling the East the freaking JV. Like, that's like my whole deal. It's like, when everyone talks about more competition, it's like, no, Jordan was great. I think we all can agree Jordan is next level great. But it's like, let's not rewrite history. Like, literally for 10 years after that, we started calling the East the JV until the Pistons were able to put together that collection of like high-level 1B players and knock off the Lakers, who had tons and tons of issues on the court. It's like, we started literally making fun of the East to the point in which we called it the JV.
Yeah, you can pick apart anybody's resume. You can pick apart LeBron's, but for whatever reasons, Jordan's is untouchable. And if LeBron wins a title this year, 7 straight trips to the finals, that'd be, what, 4 championships?
4 championships. And on top of that, LeBron gets punished. LeBron gets punished for when his teams were young and he was young. He gets punished for not winning championships. It's like, well, Jordan's teams were, when he was young and they were not, like, they didn't get there.
They didn't get to the finals. Like, exactly. So, they didn't get there. They had to get through the Pistons. And for a little while, early in his career, the Pistons made Jordan their bitch.
Well, and on top of that, the other thing that always drives me insane, it's like, yes, he won 6 championships. He was favored in every single one of them, with the exception of the first time when he beat the Lakers. And that Lakers team was well over the hill. Like, no one of these teams that he beat were ever, like, this wasn't an elite team in their prime. Like, and I think that's what drives me the most insane. Like, even though, like, I can agree still to this day that I think that Michael's the best player, it's like, the fact that so many people just dismiss the argument initially, it drives me insane, and it makes me end up going over to the LeBron side, even though I'm still back on the Jordan side. And it's like, to me, it's always been this example of, if these teams that he beat were so great, how come when they had the chances to win championships when he wasn't on the floor, how come they didn't?
All right, before I get to your final pick, podcast brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair, and you can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any make or model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about it on the podcast. You get $20 off. Contact Eric, 662-934-3846, or Shane at 662-832-8749. All right, I'm gonna go Warriors at 6.
I mean, I agree, but, I mean, God. Ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, if you told me they won in 5, I'm not sitting there going, oh, come on.
All right, I'm not going to talk to you probably until sometime later in June, 1st of July. By then, there will be a lot of developments in this Ole Miss thing.
I know a lot of our listeners want to hear your thoughts.
What do you expect from Ole Miss's response when it is released publicly sometime in the next week or so?
I think that I'm not sure how they're going to word it, but if you made me bet today, and I think June 5th is kind of the day that we're all kind of hearing and targeting as their response date, if you made me bet today, they're essentially going to admit to the boosters. I would expect some type of admission of guilt about the rebel rags, about the funkies, about all of that. I would expect some type of admission there. I think you'll see some type of response that's going to paint Barney out as a quote-unquote rogue, or however they wanted to decide that, however they want to word that. And then I think you're going to see that all of this, their response is going to somehow say that all of this occurred without Hugh Freeze's involvement or knowledge.
I think I agree with you across the board.
That's what I expect.
NCAA and its response will dispute that, and we will go to the next phase, which will be, you know, the Committee on Infractions, and how they rule, I have no clue. No clue. I agree with you, that's what Ole Miss will do. I think the investigators, when they file their response, will say, no, that's BS. We don't buy that. And they'll get in front of the committee.
Yeah, I mean, that's to me, what this is essentially going to come down to is the fact that Ole Miss is going to try and say that, yes, these things did occur. However, what you're alleging is that this all occurred with Freeze's either A, knowledge, or B, involvement. We don't agree with that. And to me, it's all going to come down to you better have some kind of foolproof plan that's going to prove how that wasn't possible. Because when you read the second NOA, it's very clear to me that they laid out a case in which it showed they understand that Ole Miss has a method for recruiting, and they proved every step. In their opinion, they proved every step of the way, and it all started with Hugh Freeze. So, again, I go back to like what Stephen Godfrey said. They better have an ace up their sleeve, because otherwise, I don't know how all of those things can be true, and at the same time, Hugh Freeze wasn't involved. There has to be some type of explanation for how he didn't know, other than just simply stating, well, he didn't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because the part of the problem with he didn't know is the NCAA might very well turn around and say, well, as we noted in failure to monitor, he should have known.
I mean, yeah, that's...
In lack of institutional control, the people above you should have known.
Yeah, and then further, it's like, how are you going to... How do you reasonably paint out a coach on your staff to be a rogue when you yourself took him off the road multiple times? You'd been warned about him multiple times. Like, how can you say, well, we didn't know, and all of those things be true? Like, to me, there's just a lot of blanks that I don't know.
It's a really difficult needle to thread. It really is. I'm not saying they can't thread it. I'm not saying they won't thread it. I don't know. But it is a difficult argument to make, and you have to make it very cleanly, and you've got to paint. If you told me I could read one response and only one response, give me Barney Ferrars.
Yes, wholeheartedly.
If you told me I can have one piece of paper in this whole thing, I know it's more than one piece of paper.
But yes.
But if you can tell me I can have one piece of paper, one response, one document, give me his.
Completely agree, because I do think I think that would tell you how it's going to go.
Because if he takes the sword and falls on the sword, okay, maybe. I mean, the committee probably would look at it and go, I don't know, but okay.
I mean, to me, that's the other difficult aspect. Even if he does fall on the sword, it creates this question of, okay, well, he fell on the sword, but either one of two things happened. Either he did it without you knowing, or B, and if he did take, and if he did do so without you knowing, you should have known. Like, to me, like, that's kind of where all, like, when people want to talk about lack of institutional control, it's like, well, that kind of is the definition of it. Like, even if you have these parts that are operating out of control, you've been warned enough, like, you should have known, like, at a certain point, that is the definition.
Yeah. That's the problem. I think it's difficult. I really do. I think it's a difficult needle for them to thread. They better have some really smooth lawyering in there.
Yes. I mean, or they better have that ace up the sleeve that we just don't know about.
Can't imagine what that would be.
I mean, that's the other aspect of it, but I guess in the spirit of fairness, I have to at least give them that benefit of the doubt that they have some ironclad defense that, I mean, to me, the point is, if you're going to go fight this as it appears that they are, wouldn't you hope they had some kind of ironclad defense?
I don't know. What other choice do you have if you're them? I mean, if you're not going to, say, you're not going to, quote, plea bargain, end quote.
Sure.
What else can you say?
I mean, that's the other aspect. It's like, okay, well, if you're not going to do that, you put yourself up. The fact that you put yourself in this position, you open yourself up to ramifications that are just catastrophic to think about.
Will be a fascinating time here in the fall. I know that even though you won't be with us every day, I know we'll be talking to you about it. I know that you will be talking about it there on the airwaves in Memphis. And I suspect we will visit about this topic more than once in the next few weeks. Hey, man, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back later this week. Tony Jones, Salt Lake City Tribune, will join us. More basketball, more NBA Finals, more what to look for in the offseason, what happens with the Jazz, what happens with Gordon Hayward. I'll get his thoughts on the draft, Fultz, some of those things as well. So until then, take care.